Welcome to Healing Ties, a show that encourages you to live happy and healthy. By focusing on the emotional, physical, spiritual, and financial aspects of life, we tie four important components together, like a bow tie. And who isn't happy when they're wearing a bow tie? This not only creates a healthy life for each one of us, but will also create healthy communities. And now, here's your host, Chris McClellan, the Bow Tie Guy.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Chris McClellan, the Bow Tie Guy, for another episode of Healing Ties. Thanks for joining us today. I want to send a shout-out to our friends across the pond on UKHealthRadio.com. Thank you for your continued support of the show. It's always great to hear from my listeners, both in the UK and in the United States and around the world. Thank you so much. So, you know, caregiving is in every neighborhood, and now it's in every boardroom. Balancing work and family caregiving is a daunting task. Just there are no two caregiving experiences alike. There are no two businesses alike when it comes to benefits and understanding the human element. Our guest today, Andy Cirillo, is president of the Aging Experience. He helps healthcare organizations craft experiences and seize opportunities in the mature marketplace. He helps family caregivers thrive and individuals make educated aging decisions. Anthony is also a contributor to the Huffington Post and recently published an article about companies cutting back on caregiver benefits and does not bode well for the long term. And today, we're going to talk about some of the issues that working family caregivers and their employees face on a daily basis. Anthony, it's great to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be back.
Yeah, tell our, you know, remind our listeners a little bit about your kind of the great work that you're doing in the aging field.
Sure. I've been in health and aging for 30 plus years. I kind of started my career in Philadelphia as a marketing executive at a hospital. But also moonlighted in music and bands and nightclubs and that kind of thing, playing guitar and singing and playing bass. And when I got out of all of that, I was looking for an outlet for my talent and started going into nursing homes and singing. And so my healthcare career sort of took a turn. Not that I wasn't exposed to elders before, but it really took a mission turn in terms of really being devoted to aging issues and caregiving issues and elders. And it really just kind of redefined what I do to the point that the name, the Aging Experience, is a new one, because I think the last time I was on the program, my company was called Fast Forward Consulting, and I had another site that had a blog, and I had another site that was for professional speaking, and now it's kind of all under one roof. And essentially, what I do is I provide strategic marketing and the patient experience, customer experience consulting to companies. Particularly with a focus on aging issues and caring for elderly populations. I'm also quite active speaking and in the media, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and you're doing great work all across the country, and you know, it's so terrific to connect with like-minded people. But I do have to say, and I might have mentioned this before, I'm a frustrated musician. So if I could do my life over again, I'd go back and start playing the violin like I've always wanted to. Maybe there's still time to do that. What do you think?
Let's get the band together.
I'm ready. So, the Traveling Wilburys number two. So.
There you go. Hey, so you know, Willie Nelson is 85, I think.
And he's still going strong. I think we could do it. I might have to practice, though. So,
all right, get cracking.
You know, one of the, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, one of the big issues right now is juggling work and family caregiving. I like to look at this this issue and compare it to what went on in the 1970s with the child care crisis. You know, companies recognized that there was an issue; they were losing good employees who decided that they wanted to stay home with their kids. And in turn, that really enacted the FMLA law, which really didn't come into existence in the 1990s. But you know, we're seeing a trend right now with working family caregivers taking care of their loved ones, their seniors, their grandparents. We're seeing a shift, and I'm not sure companies have caught up to that shift yet.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. In fact, I have a white paper about, you know, helping providers become dementia-friendly, and I talk about the first thing that you need to do in a workforce if you're a healthcare provider, but if any organization for that matter, but particularly if you're a healthcare provider, is you have to look at the issue of caregiving in the workforce. And, you know, 66 out of 10 people are family caregivers in the workforce. And the most surprising statistic, I think, that came out early last year, I think it was an AARP study with another group, and it found that 25% of family caregivers are millennials. Now, you know, let that sink in, because that's a surprising, staggering statistic, because you think millennials are that free-spirited generation that's still trying to find themselves and living in the basement with mom and dad, so, you know, still.
Right.
And, you know, it's costing companies $34 billion a year in lost productivity. You know, what is interesting in my white papers, I cite that there's been actually a steady decrease and the proportion of U.S. employers with elder care programs. Companies offering referrals for elder care dropped from 22% in 2007 to 9% in 2011. And one of my colleagues, Carol Merrick, who I did cite in a Huffington Post article, also said family leave in the workplace has decreased 8% from 07 to 2011. So at a time when we should be paying more attention to this, it seems like it still isn't on the radar of companies, and we're still at that point where, you know, I call it the, you know, people are still in the closet with caregiving. You know, they don't want to come out because they're afraid of the repercussions and the stigma.
Well, we connect 100% on this issue, because last year I finished my master's degree at Gonzaga University, which is playing in the championship basketball game tonight, I must say.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are. So I'm a big basketball fan, at least for this weekend. So.
And I'm usually not, but I'm from North Carolina, and one of the guys is from my town where we live in Huntersville. May is from here. And so normally I wouldn't root for them, but I'm going to have to root against you tonight.
Well, you know, it'll be a fun rivalry. How's that?
And they'll write a song about it and go on the roof.
You know, that might be the key. I think we're on to something here.
Yeah.
And we could demonstrate to employers how they can be helpful to their caregiving employees as we move along. But you said something that really hit home, though, about caregivers being kind of in the closet. I think it's real important as caregivers feel comfortable to self-identify at work as a family caregiver. You know, there's so many benefits to that. You could, 9 times out of 10, you're going to find another family caregiver when you do that, because you're not going to be the only one, even though we often think we're the only one. And look at the benefits of that. And you talked about this in your article also, that all of a sudden you self-identify and you can create, you have a little support group right there at work that you could meet on a, you know, maybe a weekly or a monthly basis, have lunch together and share your experience as a caregiver.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, I think you will find that there's more, you know, more people will migrate together when they find out that somebody's in a situation like that. And, you know, what it also leads to is that, you know, it's not that companies have totally turned their back on this issue. I mean, there are companies, and in my white paper, and I think in the articles as well, I cite a group called REACT, which
yes.
stands for Respect the Caregiver's Time. And there are companies like the Cleveland Clinic and Pfizer, and basically they said, you know, we're going to look at this issue of caregiving, and we recognize that, you know, keeping a productive worker in the workforce is much more desirable than losing somebody and having to recruit somebody else. And so I think they're coming around, and some of them are actually putting policies in place in their, you know, and you've seen some of these really progressive companies, you know, the Googles and whatnot, where there's, you know, 15, 16 weeks of paid family leave or paternal leave, you know, that kind of thing. Those companies are rare, but they're starting to recognize that it's important for these folks to be able to have work-life balance. And, you know, even if it's just offering space for a you know, caregivers in the workforce to you know, to meet, or to say, okay, you can use the printer to print out, you know, information or whatever it is. So it can be as simple as that to more, you know, full service programs. You know, the interesting things about family leave, and this was a big election issue, which we really haven't seen any concrete plans yet on, but you know, this whole idea of paid family leave, but it's always and still, I believe, is in the context of, you know, the expectant mother who's going on maternity leave, you know, as opposed to the family caregiver who's taking care of an elder. And, you know, those demographics are shifting. It's more the latter and less the former.
Very much so. And you know, it's folks like you who are bringing these issues to the attention of the public, because it is a shift. It is a shift in our thinking. You know, the aging experience, as you so wonderfully coined, is not often looked at in a positive light. But there's so many beautiful things about aging that go unnoticed. And this issue, as it relates to working family caregivers, is one of these, is just a prime example of that. And I think as I wrote, as I did some the research on my thesis, I'd asked a number of HR folks about their line items on their P&Ls, and I asked them what would it take to put a line item as it related to employee morale, and there was not one HR person who could articulate an answer about what the cost of employee morale is to an organization.
Right, and you know, it's interesting. So I coined a term that and wrote an article that hospitals, and this is you know, now 10 or 12 years ago, should have something called a chief experience officer in the organization. And I outlined, you know, several different. Yes, and then some healthcare organizations, well, you know, essentially my article wound up at the Cleveland Clinic and became the impetus, and one impetus for them to start this role, and it has blossomed since then. The whole patient experience movement has just, you know, exploded, but you know, a lot of it is reactionary to, you know, these HCAHPS scores that, you know, people fill out these surveys when they leave the hospital, and there's reimbursement tied to that. So, but if people think about this more holistically, you realize that the path to a better patient experience is a better employee experience, and you know, whatever that entails. And so you need a culture that's not only devoted to the patient experience but also to the employee experience. And you know, I'm on the executive board of the Dementia Action Alliance, and we have a conference, our first conference in Atlanta in June, and they want me to speak about, you know, dementia-friendly hospitals, and they've been trying to kind of pigeonhole me a little bit about getting into real very specific tactics. You know, tell me about what Hospital A is doing here and Hospital B in terms of their program. And I kept insisting that you can't talk about that until you back up and understand that the culture of an organization that it has around, you know, family caregivers. And, you know, when you talk about morale, you know, all of this is part of it. And so how, you know, what kind of culture do you have in the workplace toward, you know, family caregivers? Are you one that, if you identify one, it's a short career path to, you know, to nowhere? We know that women on average lose, you know, men are evolving more as family caregivers. I was one for 2.5 years from my mother, but, you know, women by and large are still, you know, have the bulk of the workload, and it's been said they can lose, you know, up to $300,000 in their career, not to mention what it does to stop their career. So, you know, a lot of this is culture and morale that have to be the basis before you can have programs. You know, a lot of organizations, just with this concept of, this chief experience officer. After they hear me speak, everybody wants to go back and start this office, and that's exactly not what you want to do, because you really want to make sure that you're, you know, as a culture, you're just addressing the customer experience, even if it means just the low-hanging fruit of taking care of some of the basic things that need to be taken care of, so that you evolve, you know, over time into this customer experience organization. Well, it's no different in terms of how, you know, being a best employer. You know, we see these employer, you know, the best employers lists all over the place. You know, and I would imagine most of that, you're going to see the word culture, and a lot of that is how you treat your employees, which comes down to morale. So while they may not connect it, there's an absolute connection between how a worker, you know, works and produces and is engaged and stays with an organization that absolutely impacts the bottom line. But few make the connection between some of these things that aren't on the list of we get reimbursed for that, we don't get reimbursed for this.
Right. It's more than just a number. So it's goodness.
Yeah.
I tend to, since my caregiving experience has ended, and I look at myself more as a, you know, an after caregiving, and then just recently finishing this degree in leadership and communication, I'm looking now at the issue of family caregiving, just as you coined. This is a leadership and communication issue. I think it's just really across the board, and it does directly impact culture and morale, and not only the businesses, but in the family caregiver as well. If they're not feeling supported in their place of employment, when it's a hard day at home anyway, it's two parts of your life coming together in a negative fashion.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, consider particularly healthcare workers. I mean, this is not just, you know, relegated to healthcare, but a healthcare worker, especially on the front lines, is a caregiver, paid caregiver by day, and then may go home and be a family caregiver by night. And so the journey kind of never ends. And so, you know, the support that caregivers need from each other, from companies, from policies and practices, you know, and yet we see in our culture still, and, you know, not to be too topical or controversial, but, you know, we've seen very little in government in terms of what is going to happen to aging care, what's going to happen to any of these issues. None of this is being addressed. I mean, if you change, you know, everything that's been changed is around healthcare insurance and access to insurance. Very little's been done in terms of addressing, squeezing the costs out, and more has been talked about, you know, how are we going to, you know, cut some of the entitlement programs, and nobody's talking about how do you pay for long-term care. You know, there was I forget what the name of the show was. I don't know if you saw it. It was on PBS. It was an Alzheimer's special. Was it Every Minute Counts or something
like
that?
And yes.
Yes. And, you know, it was fascinating to watch the son, you know, sort of very much in the you know, environment I was in a few years ago when we had to suddenly move mom from Florida to California, Carolina after my sister passed, and which is a whole other issue. My sister was her caregiver, and she passed before mom. And so
goodness.
That's another statistic.
That's a whole other statistic. We could do could do a ton of shows on that.
And that's a real statistic. And and so the gentleman in this program was, you know, first had to face the conversation of, you know, mom, you know, moving out of her house into an assisted living. Now, granted, she had dementia. My mother did not have one cognitive issue until the day she passed at 94. She was feisty as ever. But, you know, his journey was first that, then realizing how much this actually cost and how do I pay for this. So even if it's workplaces, you know, providing educational opportunities for people to understand these issues, people, until it becomes, you know, we're still an age-driven, a society that basically aging is a crisis. Mm-hmm. It's not something that people plan for. You know, and I joke, and you know, my wife's in the other room on calls for her own business, but, you know, she was offered a voluntary benefit of long-term care insurance in her late 30s at her company, and she took it. She's mm-hmm. never missed a payment, and her premium, including inflation riders, and she just upped her coverage, is like $800 a year because she never lapsed.
Wow.
You can't pay $800 a month, I think, for some of these policies.
Policies,
but
no.
Yet, these are conversations that have to start sooner. This poor gentleman, when he realized the impact of what this was going to do to, you know, the family financially, was just devastating. And, you know, even the assisted living, I have to give them credit. They addressed right on that when mom runs out of money, we may not be able to keep her here. And so these are real hard issues that most of the public doesn't know about until it hits them upside the head because something happens to mom or dad. They don't realize how long-term care is paid for, and nothing. None of these perceptions have necessarily changed. I'll give you, I've been talking about this a lot because it really has bothered me. I was a keynote at an assisted living, a state assisted living conference in the fall. And, you know, I was talking about how maybe things were changing a little bit in terms of the public perception of aging issues. And I talked about, you know, movies like Still Alice and, you know, documentaries about Glenn Campbell and things like that. And I asked the audience, I said, how many of you saw the movie Still Alice? And about 5% of the room raised their hand. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie, but essentially yep. It was... You know, Alec Baldwin was the husband. I forget who played the wife.
Julianne Moore, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it spoke a lot to just living in the present, which my good friend Sandy Halpern talks about all the time in terms of people who have Alzheimer's, but also what, you know, the character of Alec Baldwin was going through. And yet, none of these folks had seen it. And, you know, I talked to a CCRC administrator about this, and she said, well, we live with this every day. I said, but do you really? I said, you know, because you really were tuned into the caregiving issue of what, how it impacted Alec, which might, you know, tune you into more of what some of your employees are going through. You know, I also asked them, you know, again, some of this was kind of softball. How many of them had their own advanced directives or,
right.
You know, medical powers of attorney? And the same 5%. Raised their hand. Again, these are assisted living administrators. Then I asked how many have been, you know, in a situation where, you know, you go through this, you know, aging simulation. You know, and I talk about P.K. Bevel has called the Virtual Dementia Tour. And, you know, essentially they put, you know, the goggles and then, you know, the stuff on your feet and the gloves and all things to make you physically incapacitated. But then they also put headphones on you right before you go into a room and tell you to do 6 tasks, and the headphones mimic or exacerbate actually the current, you know, mm-hmm. sensory environment, auditory environment, and you go into this environment and, you know, I had 6 things to do, and I think one of them was turn the clock to a certain time. I think that was about the only thing I accomplished. And again, I asked them, how many of you have ever been through an AIDS simulation? And again, the same, you know, 5% of the room. And I started thinking, are these landlords, for tenants,
yes.
Or are they actual, really, you know, healthcare workers who care for their workforce? So, if it doesn't impact the top of the organization somehow, I would imagine that very few of them were family caregivers yet.
Right.
But yet it's going to affect everybody. You know, it used to be that you knew somebody who had cancer. Now it's, you know, somebody who has dementia, you know, or is struggling with family caregiving issues, and it's the lesson here's the real lesson, and companies should be heeding this as well for the future, is that we should be learning the lessons ourselves. When that, you know, son in that Alzheimer's documentary sees that mom, you know, is going to have to spend all this money and hasn't any long-term care insurance or other means, basically is going to, you know, exhaust her money, and then they might kick her out. It should be lessons to all of us that we need to be preparing, and this is something else I kind of harp on all the time, for our aging sooner in life. And I talk about 3 areas that, you know, your physical health, how you take care of yourself now, it's going to very much impact how you age. I mean, I see a lot of people who, you know, nursing homes who got there not because age caught up with them, but because they didn't keep up with them.
They didn't keep up with
them,
right?
And you know, that gets into workplace wellness programs and things like that, which again supports the work balance issue and all of this. I mean, because, you know, stress at work, all of these things lead to health consequences that have been long-standing consequences. I talk about financial aging, that people need to understand that nobody's coming to our rescue, it seems, on any of these issues. In fact, it could get a lot worse. And so if you think, you know, we've done some work just to get people to save in their 401k, but they also have to realize that when they start cashing out, that is it going to last their lifetime, and it can't just be used on the European, you know, vacation idea. You know, some of this might have to go to your health care. And then I talk about emotional aging, and then that's kind of where I get into, you know, what have I learned from elders about, you know, how they approach life, especially people in nursing homes who still, I would say, have a quality. The people I interview who you know, manifest certain qualities,
sure,
have a quality of life in these places, whether it's because they still have a sense of purpose somehow, or they still keep their, you know, learning going, or, you know, they get involved socially, or they have a, you know, attitude and an attitude of gratitude, things like that. You know, there's 7-8 things I talk about when I go out and speak around that issue that we can learn from to learn to live our lives. So these permeate the workforce because, you know, these are all issues that can be addressed when we're younger. To the extent that we, you know, embrace wellness in the workplace, and then this whole idea of work-life balance, and even intergenerational.
Sure.
You know, we know there's ageism in the workforce, and it's probably getting worse. And, you know, I feel it now. I'm going to turn 60 this month, and I just feel it in my own consulting business that as you get older, you get devalued. And that's just long-standing perceptions about, you know, and even the idea of what's old. I mean, you know, 60, I don't, you know,
well,
I'm not old.
Not to digress just a little bit, I just turned 60 in February. So,
well, there you go.
So you'll enjoy your birthday, I can guarantee you that. And, you know, I think we have a lot of wealth of experience to share with the millennials who are, as you mentioned earlier, 25% are caregiving right now. But I think until, and I had to learn this the hard way, and I, you know, my background in social work and ministry, you know, I never really attached a dollar sign to this issue. And I think when we can attach a dollar sign in some form to the issue of family caregiving and work productivity, that's when employers start taking notice.
Yes. And, you know, there's also health statistics. So I think I've cited one statistic, $34 billion in lost productivity. But, you know, there's also health consequences. You know, a family, you know, a caregiver in the workforce cost a company more in terms of health care. They just do. They're sicker. They don't take care of themselves as much. And there's real statistics behind that show you have a sicker workforce. So if you're a self-insured company that basically is paying for all of your health care, you know, this is something that's going to definitely impact the bottom line. You know, so it really does speak to the fact that you need to kind of address some of these things. You know, I one of the things I failed to mention was there's something called the Eliza Foundation, and they publish something called the Vulnerability Index. And they say, you know, when you really think about this, I think it's true. They say that if you look at all health issues, you could probably boil it down to three things. And the top one in their list was caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
The second was relationship issues. And the third was finances. And they said there are different, you know, things that can then that can help with, you know, these in terms of, you know, social support and exercise and spirituality. And then there's things like getting lack of sleep or substance abuse or feeling depressed or worried that can exacerbate these types of things. And when you look at, you know, there's some hospitals that will look at this who are thinking broadly and say, you know, when, and there are real hospitals that are doing this, they take seniors to church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And somebody would say, well, how, you know, they're not getting paid for that. Yeah, but well, they are, because if you look at one of the basic needs of that population is that they, especially if they're homebound and can't get out, is their spirituality. When they lose that, you know, they're losing something in their life, which could cause stress on the body, which can cause inflammation, which can cause disease, which right. can cause unnecessary health care. And so you really have to think broadly about how this impacts, and we still have silos in healthcare there.
That, oh, goodness.
You know, yeah. Hospital does this, a long-term care facility does this, we have six associations that represent them, and then, you know, on and on and on. And so to reach out and understand how all this works together, and, you know, there's some terms that are floating about in healthcare now, accountable care organizations and getting paid for value. But I have to tell you, a lot of that is at risk with some of the proposals that are coming forth out of Washington, because, you know, they basically don't have a keen eye on the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Innovation Center, which is coming up with these new payment models that are awarding value, not volume, and looking at how organizations, you know, if you have a hip and knee replacement, that they give you one bundle payment that covers the hospital and the long-term care. And they're starting to recognize how this, you know, goes across the aisle, so to speak, in terms of affecting many health, you know, provider entities. And so people have to, just starting with a mindset. You mentioned the dollars. The dollars are certainly real, and that gets people thinking more about it. Mm-hmm. But I still think until some of those issues hit them smack in the face, and it's their mom and their dad, they're not. A lot of them aren't going to pay a whole lot of attention to it.
Until you're in the trenches, until you're in the caregiving trenches, you really don't have a, you don't have a, you know, do you know of anybody that has caregiving on their bucket list of things that they want to do?
I know, I don't. And I joke that I build myself as a health and aging expert, but I really say, I'm the expert now only because for 2.5 years before mom passed last June, I was her caregiver. And until you have that complete experience, you know, I knew healthcare and the issues of healthcare, and I'm very involved in the aging world and the caregiving. But until you're the actual caregiver, I don't think you can bill yourself as the expert. But now I can.
Anthony, we could go on for hours. It's just a delight chatting with you. I'd like to do a few more shows. We've just kind of scratched the surface here.
That'd be great. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you. So tell our listeners how they can find you. Your all your contact information on the internet. You know, this is your time.
Yeah, one stop shop. You know, www.theagingexperience.com. And, you know, go there and you will see all the tentacles of what I do. And there's a Contact Anthony page, and, encourage people to sign up. I have a really well-read newsletter. People really value it because I don't sell in it. I basically provide good information to people. And I think if people just go to theagingexperience.com and look at the photo on my main page,
yep.
And the tagline, they will kind of understand who I am and where I'm coming from. I call it the aging experience. Just rock it.
Just rock
and,
it.
Just rock it. And I think we need to rock it, and not in a rocking chair. And the picture I have on the website is it's Photoshop, but this one woman, she's in her own rock band, basically. She plays all the instruments, and she's just kicking it. And it's a great photo.
It is a great photo. I encourage everybody to take a look at your website and that photo. And the Huffington Post article that we're chatting about today is there's a link to the article on your website, if I'm correct.
Absolutely. So I have a tab called Media Expert, and you'll see articles I've written, and you'll see articles I've been cited in. You'll see TV shows I've been on. I've been very fortunate to be on the local version of the Today Show here in Charlotte almost on a monthly basis. I talk about wide-ranging issues. In November, I was talking about how do you get seniors to get out to vote, how does that whole process work, and in January, I talked about how to become your own health advocate, because I really believe that in this day and age, and that could be another show you might want to consider, you know, because
sure.
In this day and age with so much going on, and it's easy to fall through the cracks if you don't advocate or find an advocate for your health. And so my media appearances are kind of wide-ranging in terms of the topics as well.
Well, that we can take our show on the road. I'd love to do that with you. And we will do some more shows. That would be terrific.
Sounds good.
Okay, you know, companies that recognize that their employees are their best customers tend to be more successful. Their turnover rate is low. Employee morale is high. Service is excellent. Sure, there has to be some give and take, but in the long run, who wouldn't want to hire a family caregiver? Family caregivers are the most dedicated workers an organization will ever find. Sure, you might have to juggle a schedule because being a family caregiver can be unpredictable. Employers, think of it like this. By the time you fire someone because of their role as a family caregiver, then advertise, then interview, then hire, then train, then wait for that new employee not only to gain the trust of your customer, but to show a profit, well then I think adjusting a schedule to meet the needs of a family caregiver is proactive to your ROI and most importantly, employee morale. And with the work that you're doing, Anthony, you're certainly somebody who's creating healing ties all around us. Thanks again for joining me today.
Oh, I appreciate that comment. Thank you, Chris.
Well, you know, I'm Chris McClellan, the Bowtie Guy. I'm creating a life to love after caregiving ends through radio, writing, travel, advocacy, and being with awesome people like Anthony from The Aging Experience. Healing Ties is a part of the Whole Care Network. We'll see you for another episode of Healing Ties real soon. Bye-bye.